Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio, where we highlight the best and brightest in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Today, well, first, I'm Tariq Muhammad. I'm your chairman and chief scientific officer of Original Man Scientific. I'm your host tonight. I'm absent my usual co-host, Brother Jabril. He's traveling at the moment, so please wish him safe travels. Tonight's guest is a couple who I look up to in a great amount, you know, of esteem. And right now it's just Sister Kavar on. Her husband will be joining us shortly. Sister Kavar, are you on?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, everyone. I am here. I am on.
Praise be to Allah. How you doing, sis?
Can you hear, let me ask you, Brother Tariq, can you hear me pretty well?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Okay, yes, I can.
All right. Awesome, awesome. Thank you for taking the time out of your Sunday evening to join us on the STEM Files.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Great, great. So the title of this episode is called Man, Wife, and Agriculture. I actually know a few couples that are working in agriculture together or couples that are, you know, doing something together and that they're both very passionate about, and I admire that personally. So, Sister Kavar, you know, I know your husband's not on right now, but can you kind of give us a brief background into what you guys are currently doing with the Black Agriculture Survival Expo?
Yes, sir. Well, Agriculture Survival Expo, let me just first say give props to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because it derived out of that when we had our Holy Day of Atonement in Tuskegee. So it derived out of you know, just wanting to make sure that we were able to cultivate the land, buy land, utilize the economic blueprint. And then when we realized, my husband and I sitting at the table, the dinner table one day, that, okay, once we get all of these hundreds of thousands of acres worth of land that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan wants us to get and that we as a people need, who's going to cultivate the land? So
right.
When we realized that, then what we did is we said, okay, well, we have to begin to teach, you know, young people about land cultivation. And that's more of my husband's portion, you know, teaching the actual sciences of the land. And then my portion actually is changing people's minds. So from the standpoint of promotions and marketing, to change the people's mind from the negative connotation that land is
right. Slavery,
land is pain, land is all those negative things, where really land is wealth, land is legacy, land is health. And so with that being said, we are in our fifth year of BASE, Black Agriculture Survival Expo, and in our fifth year, we decided that we need to EXPOSE, utilize the E from the acronym EXPOSE, the Black farmers to the mainstream, to the entire world. And that's what we're getting ready to do next week, Saturday.
Awesome. And, you know, I love your goal in terms of your responsibilities to changing people's minds. When I was majoring in agriculture at Virginia State, which I actually did not know, that's Brother Lawrence's alma mater, but I actually attended Virginia State University majoring in agriculture. And one of the things that alarmed me was that every time I mentioned that, people would say, I don't want to be a sharecropper, I don't want to be a slave. When that comes to, you know, comes to you, what would you say to someone that says that in that way?
Well, you know what? I would tell them that I'm a sharecropper, in all truth. You know, the land where my husband works on is not owned by us, but yet the land is there, And really, we are sharecropper, because when we, you know, put something in the land to produce, is we do everything that we can, but it's only by God's will that it's going
right.
to grow. Really, you're sharing the land with your brothers and sisters. You're sharing the land with the God that put it here for you. And, you know, a lot of those same people, they don't want to be a sharecropper, but they're okay with working with Walmart or, you know, working at Wells Fargo Bank, you know.
Right.
And so definitely, you know, I would much prefer to share a crop. And the word share is good, but who are you sharing with is the question.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
When you're sharing with your family, when you're sharing with your brothers and sisters, when you're sharing with your nation and your community, that becomes a beautiful thing. Because, as a matter of fact, they have something that's called companion farming. So to share is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. So it's pretty. They pretty much need to clear their understanding of the word sharecropper.
Exactly. And they have to take the because prior to the slave master, prior to the slave masters, because he wasn't really sharing. You were slave for
right.
a whole season, and then he would come
right.
and take everything and still tell you that you owe him, you know, and leave you barely with anything. So, but prior to that, we shared. It was part of our communal living to share everything. Family
right,
to family,
right, right.
brother to brother, sister to sister. You know, so if I grew tomatoes and you grew cucumbers and somebody else grew lettuce, we shared it and we had a salad, you know. And those are like lame and just like little terms, you know.
Right, right. You know, and it's crazy because I had a guest on the show last year who's a student at Tennessee State University. And one of the things that he mentioned, one of the things he drove home in the same response to that question was the economic value of agriculture. Can you kind of go into that and how it can establish wealth for you and your family?
Well, let's look at it in terms of, I'm not the mathematician here, but I can see in some pictures. So let me paint a little picture for you. So let's say, for example, you talk about profit and loss, or you talk about profit, the ratio of profit.
Right.
So imagine that you take one kernel of corn in terms of having a seed, and that
mm-hmm.
one kernel of corn or seed produces for you thousands of more kernels, or how many ears of corn that you now can produce, sell, eat from, give to your family, and then sell. I mean, it's just amazing what, you know, one seed would do. So the
right.
profit margin is just incredible.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
You're really looking at it from just a mathematical point of view, you know, because it's God's bounty is so much that, you know, if it wasn't for composting, sometimes we look at a crop and we're like, oh, it's so much. Some of it falls back to the earth, and you just have to rejoice.
Yeah.
There's enough for birds. There's enough for you, you know. So that becomes a beautiful thing when you talk about, you know, profit. And I would say that recently I did a report or a study, and it showed how most of these major companies that are producers of soy and corn and, you know, wheat, all of these harvests, they you're talking about billionaires, you know.
Exactly.
You're talking about people who, you know, have used crops or agriculture, or how be it, you know, in an evil way or with evil intentions to kill us by what they're putting in it, but they have maximized in terms of profit. So we would look at it from that way and turn that around and, you know, put good intentions, then we can maximize from profit, but we also can provide good health, longevity, and everything else for our people, for ourselves and for our people.
Mm. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And what in your opinion are some good crops that can help produce that kind of wealth? Like what are some of the crops that you personally have grown or have seen just do amazing things for you and your family?
When you, I'm gonna tell you what, that okra. Now I don't, let me do this disclaimer. I don't eat okra. I don't like it. I have heard from a health point of view that is one of the healthiest vegetables that you can eat. But when I tell you that crop right there is amazing. It's the value of it is amazing. So just in terms of just on our scale, on our small scale, I tell my husband, oh, no, I don't eat it. But, yeah, you have to grow it. We're definitely going to grow okra. So it just keeps coming and coming and coming. And, you know, a lot of people like it. So just in terms of our family, okra. But I'm sure when you look at it in general, you have wheat. You know, look at what everyone uses wheat for. So
right.
That takes you but. To... value added. So it's not just the crop in and of itself, but then it's how you use that crop to turn it into other useful materials or other useful foods with longer shelf life, keeping in mind not to put in so many preservatives or chemicals. But there's a whole lot that you can do with that favorite that favorite bean of yours.
Yes.
I didn't want to mention it. You mentioned it. But that favorite bean of yours, could you imagine? I think it's a verse in the Bible that said, you know, somebody gave away their birthright for a bowl of beans. So imagine what you know, a bowl of bean soup, that navy bean would do,
in
terms of wealth, in terms of health, you know.
Absolutely.
I was just trying to say, when my husband gets on, he can really give you more in terms of the data of, you know, in terms of crops that are the most profitable, meaning that, you know, the how the expense of planting and growing and harvesting versus, you know, selling. And, you know, he would have a more of a mathematical answer on that.
Awesome, awesome. Can't wait till he joins us. Can't wait. And, you know, with agriculture, you know, it's not, as we mentioned before, it's not a popular major to select in college or anything of that nature. But just coming from the origin standpoint, what drew you towards agriculture? What are your beginnings with that?
Well, you know what? I'm going to be – it's so funny because born and raised in Brooklyn and – if
hey,
we lived
New York.
On, you know, yeah. So, but if you lived on what they call a tree-lined street, which really means you had one in the middle, one at the corner, and one at the other corner, you were living, like, good. Like, you lived in a good neighborhood because you lived on a tree-lined street, right? Everything
else
was on concrete jungle. So coming to Georgia, I really had no inclinations towards agriculture per se, but going back and thinking back, I've always been an outdoorsy type of person. I always wanted to be, you know, outdoors and the greenery. I just felt really good in at home traveling. I would go places, you know, just so that I can get, you know, some green in my life. But it really wasn't until, you know, my husband found his way back into agriculture, and we began to court for the second time, and I realized he told me he wanted to be a farmer, and I said, oh, it hit me like, okay, and it just resonated with me. When you said farmer, I said, okay, I'm with that. I'm with farming, and, you know, it's been that way ever since. But funny enough, I had my own company for years, prior to, again, meeting him, prior to knowing anything about agriculture or farming, called Dress the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that company for many, 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 many years. And basically, Dress the Garden was a company that was letting people know about women. per se, you know, dressing up, you know, every woman is a flower in the garden. And I was able to transition to dress the garden from that point over into have really, you know, Dress the Garden is the line of products that we produce, added values of dressings and sauces, everything fresh from the garden, from our own garden.
Beautiful, beautiful. And what kind of feeling does agriculture or farming or just working with the soil in general give to you? Because I know it's therapeutic. I know it's definitely fun for most people. But what kind of feeling does it bring for you, you know, as a farmer and as somebody that has produced from the land?
I mean, it's so satisfying. It's a feeling that it makes you grateful. It really does make you grateful because when you understand that you plant the seed and you do all that you can, but in the end, it's not you who is going to grow that seed. So it brings you closer to the creator of everything. You know what I mean? And that he allows you or me, you and I, to be producers. You know, that
right.
is a absolutely beautiful thing.
Agree, definitely agree. You know, there are times where someone may be going through something economically, or someone may be going through something mentally or spiritually. How important is it that agriculture is able to hone in on all those different things and bring out positive things from that? Like if somebody was to, just be going through a death in the family or something like that, or going through some type of economic mm-hmm. stress. It's amazing mm-hmm. how agriculture can, you know, heal those different things. What are the characteristics of agriculture or the qualities that make it suitable to do those things?
Well, you know what? That is so true. Going back to the earth, communing, being one, knowing that if Allah is able to produce in that way for seeing something grow stage by stage into eventual perfection, into eventual, okay, it's now time to harvest. That lets you know that, I guess, how you can say, Allah's not done with you yet. He's not done with me. He's not done with you yet. You know, and that there's going to be another day of growth, another day of development. And that even when you go into the garden, you see the different crops, even though they, you know, planted sometimes from the very seed that goes into the very seed, none of them look alike. Some of them may look a little uglier than the other ones, but they all have value.
Right.
I can say that one of the things that, you know, maybe I don't want to say this too loud for people listening, but one of the things that I can say is that a lot of people send their children to us, you know, where we do farm at, and, you know, they send them for punishment. You know, they say, okay, you're going. We gonna send you, not as parents, we gonna send you down south. We gonna send you to the farm. You gonna learn some discipline. You gonna get some hard work.
Right.
And I tell you, when they get there, they become like a whole different being. When they, male or female, when they put their hand in the dirt, and they begin to, just see Allah and His glory, they become different beings. And then it's like we have to say, shh, don't tell your mama no. What happened here, you know?
right.
Yeah, because we want them to think that we hard worked you. See, because they have that slave mentality that we, you know, slaved you out and now you learned your lesson. But really, it's like, oh, Lord, when can we come back? When can we come back to the farm? You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, wow. Definitely. I can watch my husband from, like, the window of how we're situated in the garden. And, I mean, he is, like so at peace, you know, when he's, you know, in the garden. He's just so at peace.
Right.
You know,
yeah, it
so.
Definitely does that to you.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely does. You know, and I just want to, you know, bear witness because there was a case, well, I think for me, when I was in college, it kind of helped relieve the stress of college because there was a you know, Virginia State is a land grant. It's actually, you know, the first land grant in the United States, and it has like this 500-acre farm and everything, and that being an agriculture major on campus helped out a lot with the stresses that on campus, like the finals, the social issues and whatnot. You know, that was definitely a good getaway. So, you know, I definitely feel what Brother Lawrence feels and what you feel in terms of just how it, you know, brings out that, you know, that inner peace. You know, it's almost like, you know, when you go home to a good wife or the good husband, you know, it's kind of like that feeling, you know?
Right. And I think that when you mentioned wife and husband, I think that it's so communal. It's so family when you get to that point. It's because it's dependent level on two people working together, you know, two people. So basically, it's funny because so my husband grows lettuce. Let's say, okay, lettuce is in season, like literally. Like, so it's funny because he's like, when his lettuce is in season, if I go out to a restaurant, even if we go like to a restaurant or maybe we may go to a friend's house or something, if I order the salad, he look at me like, oh no, are you a traitor? We don't eat anybody else's lettuce, you know, you can't bring him no lettuce, okay? We don't eat anything with our lettuce, you know, this is the lettuce that we grew from my hand. So as a wife, it's like it feels so wonderful to be able to go out knowing that he put his sweat, you know, energy, time, blessings into growing a zucchini, and for me to be able to go out and harvest that zucchini and prepare a meal that's going to nourish him, I mean, it's just amazing.
Got it.
Very amazing.
Awesome. And I want to touch on that husband-wife working together atmosphere. You know, I myself and my wife, we also work together in the same field, you know, in medicine and medical related things. What does it mean for a couple, especially to work together in something, especially sharing a passion for something like ag? You know, how important is that for a couple to do something like that together?
I think it's very important. I think that, you know, as a wife, it's important to support your husband in his mission. And at the same time, when it's something that you really, you know, like I said, my aspects of it, where Allah can make it compatible, my aspect of, you know, making known, you know, agriculture to the world and the importance of it. Like, it comes from me just watching everything that he does. You know, it comes from watching how, you know, hard he works and saying, okay, but, you know, if we pull some resources, then, you know, this will be a little easier. But we have to expose it. We have to let people understand that the value in it. And but after that has really become my passion. People say, oh, you sound like you've been in agriculture for forever. Like, you know a lot. And I'm like, no, I just learned from, you know, watching him. But it has become a passion of mine. It really has. So, you know, I'll go study something and just, like, text him and say, hey, did you know this or did you see this? And we do a lot of research, you know, and I think that it's just important in terms of, you know, being compatible, both seeing the same vision or seeing the same goal. I think it's very important.
Do you think couples, such, you know, just married, just speaking in terms of married couples, do you think they have a higher rate of success in their marriage if they're doing things together that, you know, if they're doing one thing together that they both like?
I think so. I think if they both love it, yes. But you still have to manage marriage in general because sometimes it gets a little sticky. You know, I'll be honest that sometimes, you know, although we want the same thing, we may see differently on how to get it. or how, you know, which way to go, because it's still that same journey of two people trying to become one, you know. So, like, okay, I'll paint another picture. So, for example, my thing is promotion and marketing. His thing is growing. So when we do farmers markets, you know, like one year he had watermelon juice or some other stuff. So, you know, he don't have a problem putting it on the back of the pickup truck and just going out to the farmers market. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We need a table with a tablecloth, put out the samples, make it look nice, put the sign up, you know.
Okay.
I'm like, I know. Like, I'll see a picture. I'm like, oh, God, please don't tell me he set up like that at the farmers market. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
Those type of things, you know, could get a little. And he'd be like, okay, would you just stop nagging me about that? I'm like, maybe did you put the sign up? And I'm like, oh, God. So you didn't have a tablecloth? Oh, no. To me, like, that's like a major disrespect, okay?
Oh, wow.
So those type of things, you know, you still have to work through.
Okay, awesome. Hey, you know, just what are some of the challenges that you face in agriculture and, you know, and just, you know, just in general, like working with agriculture, working with my brother Lawrence in agriculture, what are some of the challenges that you face, that you both face together dealing with ag?
Bills, really, quite honestly, you know, until it gets to a point where it's valued. So, you know, for the event that we're putting on, there's no Coca-Cola sponsorship or anything like that. So basically you pay for whatever you want to see, you pay for it out of pocket. And, you know, sometimes you have to work two or three jobs outside of the agriculture to provide. My husband's a really hard worker, you know, so you have to work outside of doing what you see a provider in the sense of straight finances. You know,
right,
sometimes that is a challenge. But I think a lot that, you know, I've never been a type of person. I'm more into resources versus dollars and cents. So my whole thing is like, okay, we need this. Okay, let me see how I can force that. What resources do we have?
Right.
And so so that could be a challenge, you know, something to have to work with. You know, and just the maintenance of the land in and of itself. Like, how fast the grass grows, or if the tractor breaks, and then you have to become a engineer or a plumber or, you know, those type of things, you know, become challenging because, you know, you have to talk about pest control, you know, fencing, and you still keeping all of that in mind, basically subduing the earth. It's no joke trying to subdue the earth. And so, but at the same time, you still keeping in mind that you are not trying to kill the earth, but that you're trying to coexist with it, and that you're trying to, you know, coexist with the animals. For the first time that, you know, we saw a snake, big snakes, like most women, we're like, oh, my God. Okay, thank God I'm not afraid of snakes. So it's like, okay, what are we going to do with it? Is it a poisonous one? No. Okay, then catch and release. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay, so this is a poisonous one. I can't mind what we're going to do. Okay, we got to get rid of this one. You know, that's one of the other challenges. I'll have to be real. For me, so my husband is doing the stroke of lambs now, so I can't really go back out there. I don't eat meat, but I really can't go back because my mind is saying that, okay, one day, they out of here, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
For me, personally, you know, it's a little, you know, I stand up a little bit on that, cause, you know, I'm looking at Bambi. Like, your last days is coming.
Man, I can't wait till my Lord get on the show because I just can't wait to see his point of view.
And
you know,
tell me. Let me tell you, he'd be like, look, this is fine. I mean, he's just so manly with it. What? That's the cycle of life. This is manly. This is what, you know. That's how he feels.
Right.
I'd be like, yeah, I know, but I'm like, are they cold out there? Like, we get a really, really cold day, you know.
Right.
Look, Allah made them like that to be, you know, out in the wild and all like this. So.
Awesome. It's beautiful to see a couple, you know, just doing things together. And as I said before, you know, it definitely improves the marriage and increases the success rate. But what I want to know is from you, is there anything that you see yourself doing other than agriculture? Or is this like the number one thing that you love doing the most?
Actually, I mean, it's the base, as in Black Agriculture Survival Expo. I see myself doing many things, and I have done many things. But it's the foundation. It's the base. It is, I guess, the root. And then from the root, you can do a whole lot of things. I mean, when you talk about agriculture now, you talk about prior to, again, with Dress the Garden, I was an event planner. So I would plan a lot of spa days for women, do a lot of events. But with the agriculture, you can do the same thing. So now they're having so many beautiful farm weddings. They're having farm spa days, you know, so all those types of things that, and traveling the world. I love to travel. So I see how, you know, when you're connected to the land, to the earth, that all of those things are available to you.
Right.
You know, so the agriculture really is the base, you know, of it all, but you definitely can grow from your base. And that's very, what I want to say is that's very important. And why I say that is because the youth, we get a lot of youth involved, and a lot of youth don't necessarily want to put their hands in the dirt. But you have to be able to show them that even though you don't want to put your hands in the dirt, there's so many things out of agriculture, agribusiness, that you can accomplish as a support system that's needed. So if you want to be in the field of technology, and I'm so excited about this particular event because we have partnered with some young brothers in technology that is going to be revealing some amazing things, and I want to jump the gun because I want people to come out or watch the live link that we're going to have to see this new technology that's going to, you know, be so supportive of Black farmers. So when you think about them picking cotton, you know, that hard work, the genius of the Black man to say, you know what, we're going to make a cotton gin, you know,
to make our own easier.
So technology is a big thing, you know.
Yes.
Construction is a big thing. Electrical engineers is a big thing. Even an accountant. You know, we talk about that profit margin, so an accountant.
Yes, definitely needed.
On the farm accountant is definitely needed, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, going from all those different aspects, you know, I work very heavy in the Ministry of Science and Technology. How important is it that all the nine ministries come together and work for a common goal? And do you feel that any of them are more important than the other, or do you feel that they're equal or all the same?
I think that they're equal and all the same. The importance level is based on the value to the person and to all of us, and the value in building a nation and a community. You know, to take one away means that you are limiting a portion of yourself. You know, a portion of your nation takes something away. So I wouldn't say, okay, this one is more valuable than this. You know, because if you have agriculture, and then you say you you work with science and technology, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So if you how far could you get if you had someone who could do research and develop and figure out, you know, without using genetically modified or the intentions of genetically modified GMOs.
You go very far.
It's to kill us. But imagine if you went the opposite and found, you know, something in the navy bean or something in the whatever vegetable, beta carotene, and learned how to use that to, you know, cure diseases. You know, I mean, that's where we move out of spookism, like, oh, well, God is going to take care of us all, into some real deep science. So we need those sciences. We need the technology because the technology helps us to move faster. So one of the brothers that we're going to be honoring at the event, and if I can get a chance, I was waiting for my husband to come, I really do want to tell you, the listening audience, about the actual event.
Absolutely.
But one of the brothers, I haven't seen it, but I'm told that he heard his lamb or his sheep was droned. Now look at that technology. He don't even have to go out. Put the drone up.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And it's crazy because, like, I gave that idea to Dr. I proposed that idea to Dr. Ridgely, you know, in terms of a drone. And he kind of saw the potential that it has to help monitor your land or your animals, you know.
Oh,
so when I hear that, that's pretty refreshing to hear something like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because guess what? I mean, we're the makers of technology. What did the person that when he created the cotton gin, what did the person say to him first? Man, what are you talking about? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it changed the whole game.
Exactly. I'm sure there's so plenty of other inventions, silos, and all kind of other stuff that, you know, like you said, I mean, solar panels right now. So if you can solar panel your whole field, you know, I mean, just so much that you can do with technology, you know. So we definitely have to respectfully use technology without again. And you know, I believe that with technology, a lot of it comes down to intention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are your intentions when you are using this technology? Are your intentions to, for the lack of better words, your intentions have murder written all over it for profit and gain? You know what I mean? Or is it your intention to use a key like technology to benefit, to feed the world? So if you want to produce more with less, and so you are able to use technology in that sense without disrupting, without killing, you know, because a lot of people, famine is in the land. We don't see it, but from a spiritual level, famine is definitely in the land. These storms that have gone through conference up in Helen, Georgia, not too long ago, and the U.S., the Attorney of Agriculture, U.S. Attorney of Agriculture, he was letting us know that the
you mean the Secretary?
The Secretary, yes, excuse me, yes, the Secretary of Agriculture. I think his name is Mr. Black, Gary Black.
Right.
And he let us know that because of what happened in Florida, like, it's so much devastation that Georgia now wants to go into the business. Now, Georgia
really took
a branch. Oh, yes. He let us know. He gave us a whole plan. He said, if you know anybody, we talking 10,000 acres to even start. And he gave us a location looking more towards South Georgia because, of course, the warmer climate. But he said, we can find people. We putting all of so much money towards the citrus agriculture in terms of citrus because of the devastation in Florida. So, I mean, it's just really amazing of what we really don't know. We really, because we see, you know, it hasn't hit us.
Right.
We still go to Walmart and able to get your you half a gallon of Tropicana, you know. Mm-hmm. But in truth, they suffered. Allah put something on them in the citrus agriculture crops really, really did suffer very badly.
And you know, sometimes we don't see that something may you know they did suffer, you know, because I read all the reports and everything like that. I read the surveys that they did, and most of the time when we see it, something that's devastating or something that happened due to a catastrophic event, we don't see the plus side to it, you know, the economic potential or advantage that you can take as a result of that. Because of the devastation in Florida, now all the citrus crops are coming up here. You know, people are going to be able to, you know, produce more oranges and different types of other citrus products from their land because of what happened in Florida. You know, so it can be, you know, economic plus side, you know, for other people who may want to go into another market, or for people that don't have a market and now they do, you know, they can take advantage of that.
Exactly. That's just one crop. Not to say what happened to the bananas over into the Caribbeans and everything else. So now is the time to be thinking about it for rebuilding, you know, to be thinking about land, to be thinking about the economic blueprint, because really, in truth, again, that is what BASE was born out of, the economic blueprint. So definitely, you know, listeners, support the economicblueprint.org. You know, go on. 5 cents a day is what is asked for. It's painless. 5 cents a day to purchase land that's for sale. You know, where we are in Noonan, up and down all of the roads, you see a big for sale signs. And I'm sure that the land around the South in the country in rural areas is so much for sale.
Yes, definitely. Hey, you know, there are a lot of companies and nonprofit organizations that I know of, including yours and my own, that stem from the economic blueprint. How important is it for us to build our businesses and our nonprofits around a structure like that?
It's very important. Currently, BASE, Black Agriculture Survival Expo, is not a nonprofit, and I'll tell you why. Is because what we envision doing, we have to have a level of sovereignty. That doesn't mean, however, that another one of our educational programs can't be non-for-profit, which we're working on now, making one of our education programs a non-for-profit, so that we can do things in the school system, so that we can get to our people in the way that we need to get to them in this system that we're currently in. But BASE is a sovereign company, only because, again, you know, repping, if I can use that word, our minister, we have to be free. We have been recipients of many scholarships to go to different agriculture seminars and different things of that nature. And there are a lot of rules and regulations, things that you can say, things that you can't say,
right,
when you go to these types of events. So when people come to our event, you know, yes, we've paid for it. Sometimes we're able to give scholarships. Many times we're not. But what we are able to do is to give the unadulterated truth as we know it, and to allow you to say what it is that you want to say without thinking about whether or not, you know, without being scared, without shaking in your boots. So we're able to have real conversations and not be censored. And so we need that freedom. So that's why the support of all those who have supported us thus far, you know, in any way, whether it's buying some produce, whether it's coming down and helping to harvest, you know, whether it's just a prayer, whether it's sending someone else down. We get, like I said, a lot of young people, a lot of youth, a lot of apprenticeship. And all of those things are part of the resources that's able to, you know, keep us going. And so we're so grateful and thankful for that. And right now the theme of the actual show is shining the light in the darkness. So it's a Black Farmers Award ceremony show on Saturday, mm-hmm. December 9th. And what we have done is we got a conglomerate of what we would call supporters of farmers, industry supporters, and then we're going to marry them with the farmers themselves. So, and we're going to award them for the work that they have already been doing and basically shining the light on them, because we want them to, you know, we want the people to see them. We want them to know that, no, you can go to Walmart and get a tomato, but it's not the same for the Black farmer. It's not the same as if a Black farmer teach you how to grow your own tomato. So, you know, we really, really want to change their mind. And not just change their mind in a way where it's boring. The show has entertainment. It's just like on the level of the BET Awards. You know, this is our first year, so right. we're going to be moving up and up every year from this point. But we want people, we have some young people, you know, that, you know, when they rap about agriculture, when I say it's off the chain, it's off the chain, you know.
Right.
Rapping about broccoli, you know, we have some R&B singers, you know, that, you know, are in love with the land. They're farmers or gardeners themselves. Last night I went to an event and I actually met the brother who did the bronze statue in Birmingham, Alabama, with the dog and the police officer that's like reaching out and biting, you know, the Black people back in those days. So it's like in the city of Alabama. I don't know if you've seen it. You may have seen it. It's a very, very, very famous statue. It's been in all.
Yeah, I heard about it. I would have loved to have seen it when I was down there.
Right. So I met the brother, and the first thing that, after we started talking, the first thing he said, he wants to do something for us, for agriculture, because everything that he says, everything that I use, he uses from the earth. So his name is Ronald McDowell, Ronald S. McDowell. I want to give him a shout out. He was Michael Jackson's personal, art teacher for over 12, 13 years. So he was sharing some pictures with me of him and Michael Jackson and, you know, everything, all of the sculptures that he did and, you know, absolutely, absolutely amazing. Using, again, so all these things, even if you want to be an artist, come from the earth. So you're using now bronze, you're using minerals, you're using granite. All of these things come from the earth.
Wow. You know, I definitely look forward to being there next Saturday, well, this coming Saturday on the 9th. How can people find out more information about it?
Well, what they can absolutely do is they can go to our Facebook page, where we are actually going to have all of the information, and that's Facebook at Black Agriculture Survival. It's Black Agriculture Survival. I believe that it's closed out for all of the nominees to nominate a Black farmer right now, but we'll be doing live voting from that page on Saturday, December 9th, so you can actually see who the nominees were, what they were doing. We have nominees from as far away as Damona, Israel, and also Nigeria, and locally here in Atlanta, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have someone from Columbus, Ohio, Berlin, Key. So these are all of the places that we have people who were nominated for an award. And some of the awards are the New Adam and Eve Farmer of the Year. We have the Soldier of the Soil nomination for composting. And our, well, see, I'm trying to wait for my husband to get on so he can, so he can, I don't want to give it all away. So he can give us some of the real exciting stuff.
Get on. Say that again.
I said, I'm trying to wait for him to get on so that way he'll, did he just text me actually? Let me just look at this really. Is there a way for him to log on through his computer?
Yes, if he goes to www.blogtalkradio. Well, no. Well, if he if he's a guest, he has to call in through that number.
Oh, okay.
But if you if you're listening, you can go online and listen.
Okay, let me tell him that.
Okay.
Okay. Call in number. I told you about those three jobs, right? So he's trying to call. He's trying to call in from work, actually. So, thank you for your patience. Thank the listening audience.
Oh, it's no problem.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he had texted me asking for the number. I sent it to him. I'm not sure if he got it or not.
Yeah, I just texted him as well. So, do you want to tell the listening what you're going to actually be doing at the event?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'll be helping out with, on the technology and the Facebook Live and everything. But another thing I'll be doing is presenting on my Navy Beam research that I've been working on for the past, 5 years. It's definitely, I've never actually been, this is my first time presenting, let me correct myself. I presented my research in a professional form before, but never at an award ceremony. So it's definitely a wonderful opportunity for me. I have not presented on my research in a long time. It's been about 3 years since I presented. And it's mainly due because I've just been working on it so much, and I didn't want to, present unfinished stuff. And it's still not finished, but it's a lot further along than it was 3 years ago, So I definitely look forward to the opportunity, and I thank you for it as well.
Yes, sir. I mean, I just think that is amazing. One of the major things that I see is that we do not do as a community – we do not do enough research and development.
Right.
Because we're always trying to, just survive, do whatever it is, go to work, get the money, pay our bills, go to work, get the money, pay our bills.
Right.
Even in our spiritual life in terms of, going out and, going out to the people and trying to help raise the dead, raise their consciousness, and bring light to the community, that also takes time. But to be able to just sit down and observe, one of the things courses that we took when we went up to Helen was a brother talked about permaculture. And I didn't know much about what permaculture was. I thought I had an idea, but basically he was saying how permaculture kind of allows you to live in unity and in peace with your environment without so much destroying of the environment so that you coexist. But one of the things in permaculture that he said is that before you you know, begin to plant or whatever it is that you're trying to do, that you need to observe. You need to observe the land. You need to see which way the water flows, you know, when it rains.
Right.
So that you know that, okay, you're not putting your garden over here and it's going to flood out. Or
right.
Which way, you know, even if you have animals on your on your land, which way is the pattern where the deers may, congregate or give birth, or so that way, you know, you're not going to go and put, you know, your garden right in the middle of where the deers, you know, that's their
exactly.
space, you know. So, but it takes time. He said, really, you need at least a whole year before you start where you're going to fence off for animals, where you're going to. But when you think about it, it's like, because we're talking again about that profit margin and that time, do we have time to sit and just observe for a whole year?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So we have to be able to begin to invest. And this is the other portion of base. For those who do not want to put their hands necessarily into the ground. Hold on one second. Let me see. Actually, that's him. I might be able to connect him. Well, hold on. Let's see.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. He's trying to call in now for whatever reason. Technical, see? The non-technical person. That's why we need you.
Okay.
I was trying to make it connect, but my phone wasn't giving me the little icon to say conference. So he's trying to call in now.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
all
but,
right.
That's what I was saying in terms of the dirt.
I'm sorry, sis, what did you say?
I said that's what I was just saying to finish the thought in terms of, but you know, you get a lot of companies that give endowment, which I think that you said
right.
you was a recipient of for a while, and for you to sit and research something, you know what I mean? That's very
yeah.
important. And that's
yeah,
why we need to invest,
mm-hmm.
have the capital, you know, to invest so that we can take young, bright minds, self, and, you know, free you of having to worry about, you know, rent and this and that, and put you to work in research and development, you know. It's important.
Right, right.
Of health, of legacy building, of wealth building, of just providing for the future.
That's right. That's right. And you know that's one of the ultimate goals of Original Man Scientific, which is I have two things. I have the for profit side and the non profit side. The for profit OMS is designed to deliver all the benefits that you can think of with R&D to your community, and then we have the non profit side, which is the New Mind Science Foundation, which is kind of like the more community-based version of the National Science Foundation. And what we do, and what we do on that nonprofit side is that we raise funds to you know, provide, you know, financial security to people who are doing scientific research or going to school for science major. You know, so if somebody wanted to go to school for agriculture, or somebody wanted to travel for ag, or do agricultural research or biology or engineering, anything related to science and tech, they will receive money to fund that particular goal. You
wow.
know, so right now we're yes ma'am, we're getting ready to go into 501c3 status so we can be official. We really haven't really started promoting it yet until we get that done. And you know, I really want that to be of a help to base. You know, to whatever you guys are doing, because the foundation doesn't just support people in a certain age group. It supports anybody doing something in science, you know, that's positive and that will make a change in your life and in your community.
Excellent, because we get a lot of young apprentices. You know, they come to the farm and they work hard, But and when it comes down to it, they still, you know, need to have the finances again to keep themselves going. And again, we have to begin to start talking about community building, you know, meaning that, you know, we building community based around the agriculture versus based around the concrete jungle.
Right. Exactly. You know. And it's even the concrete jungle, you know, they themselves can't live without what agriculture produces, because every little, even mining, like if you go into the mountains and mine for certain types of metals, even that is a part of agriculture, because a mountain is a part of a field, you know, it's a part of any type of field. And we know that agriculture, if you know what the word means, agri means field, you know, so if we can just, you know, see agriculture in everything, you know, in every little thing that we have and everything that we do, even sports or entertainment, it's all there. If we would just, you know, be able to understand agriculture enough to see where everything fits in.
Exactly. Exactly. Once again, we need your support. We want your support for the farmers. And for you, it's for those people who think that, you know, oh, okay, it's just an event for the farmers. Really, like you just said, no, it really isn't. It is an event so that we can highlight the black farmers, so that you can know what it is that they do, where they are. You know, when the truck stops, run into Walmart, you know, if you know where a black local farmer is, at least you know where you can go and try to get something to eat, some food, or how far you need to go to, you know, get some fresh vegetables, or even have them come and show you how to grow in some pots right around home. You know, urban farming is one of the other one of the other categories that we have, which is a huge category right now. Urban farming, getting rid of food deserts for our people who are in these cities, concrete jungles, and have miles and miles before they can get some fresh, live food. So we're definitely going to be honoring urban farmers. We're going to be honoring chefs, because it's one thing to grow the food, and Dr. Ridgely said this our second year of BASE, is one thing to be able to grow the food, but if you don't know what to do with it once you grow it, you don't know how to put it in the pan, you don't know what to do with it, then it's still not valuable.
Right, right.
Yes, sir. Linking the industry to agriculture, linking the arts to agriculture. So all of those things that are linking financing, so venture capitalists will be there. So we're linking finances to agriculture. We're linking technology to agriculture. And we're so looking forward to having everyone to come out and to support and to learn more. You know, to be a witness of, you know, when they say it's going to be a new heaven and a new earth, well, who's going to create the new earth? You know, it's making some right down here, some new earth. Soldiers of the soil. When I talk about amazement, that amaze, that whole composting and making new earth, because I saw him take nothing and actually make it into something black, rich, filled with life, earth, you know, from stuff that people were throwing away or thought that was not valuable.
And it's crazy because it all goes back to understanding. Like if you don't understand what value and what something that's not what it means for something to not be valuable, you know, then people are just going to disregard, you know, things that can change their lives, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know.
Was
he able to get on or no?
I don't see him in the queue yet. That's that brother right there. I'm waiting on brother right there. I don't see him in the queue.
Wow. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if he got held up. He said he texted that he's trying to get on about 2 minutes ago. Quite sure.
Let me see. I think I gave him the right number.
Okay.
Let me 4, 6, 7, 8, 7, 8, 8. Yep, it's the right number.
Okay. Are you able to? Let me see.
I can try to do a three-way.
Let me see.
If you let him, if you can let him know, I can call him into the call via three-way. If you let him know.
Okay. Let me see. How is your beautiful wife, by the way?
She's well, thank God. She's out there saving lives right now. You know, she just became an EMT.
Wow, excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's another thing. I mean, it's so much. Even when you begin to talk about the health.
Yes.
You know, the foods and health and how to eat to live. There's so many aspects that, you know, comes directly from the earth that we can prevent, that we can, you know, heal ourselves with the food, you know. And not just the growing of the food. My husband can tell you more, but again, I talk about the intentions, because the energy that you put in the ground and put in the food, you know, you can have two plots of land and one
right.
person's energy and their motives and their intentions of why they're growing something versus, you know, the person whose motives and intentions are, you know, for healing, for health, for wealth of you know, the family, of the nation, of the community. Because I know for a fact, you know, my husband put, you know, good intentions, you know, into the food, into the growing, you know.
Definitely.
So he calls his vegetables pharaconic, not organic, but pharaconic. You know, because they listen to Farrakhan. Like, you know, you put them on and they listen, you know.
Right. Wow. So. And, you know, and that it definitely makes a difference, you know, because, like, if you have heart disease, and that's one of that's one of the key things I work on with my research is cardiovascular disease, atherosclerosis, all that, you know, arteries being clogged up and whatnot. One of the things that is very important is that you can't say that the Navy being from Michigan, the pearls, the white pearls, the Navy beans from Michigan, and the Navy beans from Goya are going to have the same effect on the human body.
Wow.
Because you may call them both Navy beans, but in essence and in truth, they're two different genes.
Wow.
You know,
and how they're grown is that the climate, where they come from. I'm getting too much into it. We got to save some for Saturday.
Absolutely, definitely. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said we just gonna give them a little preview because we want them to come out so
right.
they can really.
Absolutely, absolutely. Was Lawrence able to get on? Do you know what the status is?
I'm texting you the number where he is now, where you can patch him in right now.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, yes, yeah, so I just sent you the number to try to see if we can patch him in.
Okay, give me one sec.
All right.
Can everyone hear me? Brother Lawrence, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Uh-huh.
Sister Caval, can you hear me?
I sure can. Welcome,
awesome.
Husband.
How you doing, sir?
I'm great. I'm great. Give me 1 minute. I just stepped outside.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I was telling the listening audience about your three jobs, so I was hoping that they would understand and give you a little pass. I was telling them how, you know, farming, sometimes you have to go out from off the land and do other things as well to keep it going.
Gotta do it. I got
10 jobs. Awesome. Yes, sir. Thank you for joining us this evening, sir. We really appreciate your presence.
Oh, yes, sir.
Awesome.
All right, so what are you?
Say that again.
I said, what was the conversation?
So we were really just talking about the importance of agriculture and affecting your community, making it safe and decent. And, you know, Sister Caval had provided your bios and everything. And I had a set of questions for you, as I did for Sister Caval. I wanted to kind of go into your background a little bit first, you know, your time at Virginia State University. What was it? Did you major in agriculture at Virginia State?
Absolutely not. I majored in Heinekens and 40 ounces. That's what I majored in. I was an athlete. I was on a 4-year track scholarship when I went to Virginia State. I didn't have any inclination of agriculture. Although I did, you know, before that, I did have upbringing where my father taught me how to all the noise.
Yes, sir.
But I had, before college, you know, when I was in elementary school and whatnot, my father, who was from Jamaica, taught me how to garden. And that was my first, you know, real hands-on experience with gardening, is that in Hartford we had a garden, you know. Every year the yard would get bigger and bigger. I mean, the garden would get bigger and bigger, and our yard would get smaller and smaller. And so I started that way, and, you know, some of the dynamics where my mother was from the South, and they ran away from the farm. They didn't want anything to do with agriculture. So that time in Connecticut back in the 70s, you know, they used to do tobacco. And back then, you could make $9 an hour. Back then, $8, $9 an hour in the summer picking tobacco. But my mother was like, no, you couldn't do that. She would never let me do it because of the stereotypes of, you know, farming. So I got formal training from a place called the Knox Park Foundation when I was 12. I got formal training in horticulture. I did that for 5 years and left it alone. Went to Virginia State on a track scholarship and ran into all kind of problems, you know, down in Virginia. But really didn't get back in touch with agriculture until I moved to Georgia in 2007. It was at a Million Man March anniversary in 2009, I believe it was. Yeah, I think it was 2010. It was a Million Man March anniversary, and I got involved in Miami. I saw a clip of Will Allen, and then that led me to go online and start researching. And I wound up going to the Will Allen facility in Milwaukee with Sister Bessie Jean Farrakhan, her husband, and some other believers for the 4-month training. And that's what really started me officially in the agricultural, organic, composting realm. Was it really in 2011. Yeah, 2011.
Got it. This question is actually for both of you. What was the experience like teaching and just kind of training under Will Allen?
Well, my wife didn't go to Will Allen. We weren't even married then.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Now we weren't married then, but that was a phenomenal experience because we went one weekend for the month. We went to his facility, and you know it was a heck of an experience because he had his little farm in Milwaukee, and he had the hoop houses.
Yep.
He had the hoop houses. He had the aquaponics. And it was like being in heaven, man. Even though it was freezing cold out there in Milwaukee, we were building hoop houses and doing all kind of stuff in the cold. It was a wonderful experience. You know, we had our challenges because prior to the 13 or 12 of us from the nation, they really hadn't had that large of a black group attend the training. You know, the white folks was eating the training up. So when we got there, you know, there was all these, you know, of course, Brother Maurice Farrakhan, Sister Betjadeen Farrakhan. In one meeting, this white dude, you know, tried to crack a little racist joke. And, man, we got in his behind so deep. He had said a little wide crack joke about terrorists. And Brother Tata got behind this white dude. And I said, we put so much pressure on this white boy, he didn't come back. You know, no, we don't play that crap. You keep your damn mouth shut. So, but it was interesting. They had a part of the training which we didn't expect it, dealing with food justice.
Mm-hmm.
And while Alan Dorman, you know, she's biracial, her mother's white, her father's wild, he's black. Man, she went in, so she started feeling the spirit of the believer. You know, the Muslims that were there. We started explaining to her how our mosques and how we're in all these different cities and we got all these different believers doing all this different stuff. And we weren't trying to sound like big, but just being in the nation and having the structure we had, these people were just blown out of the water by how we operate. And so when we did the food justice part, you know, she got real emotional because there was one sister, what's the sister's name from New York? The older sister. She started talking about her father, how they were run off the farmland, and she got, oh, my gosh, she went there because it was a part dealing with land and justice. So we had a sister whose father was a sharecropper, and the room divided. The white folks was on one side, and the black folks was on the other side. When we started talking about slavery and how these white folks stole the land, and you had people there whose parents, they witnessed that. And the white folks didn't want to hear that, you know. And Erica Allen had to check them and said, this is part of the whole food sovereignty issue.
Right.
Is that, you know, Americans have stolen the land of black people. You know, see, that's why we have food deserts, you know. Kabbalah, what's the sister's name from New York? Older
if
sister?
You hadn't asked me, I would have called her name. I'm looking at my beautiful sister's face right now.
Faja? Is it Faja?
The Faja.
Yeah, I know who she is. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, she started talking about her father and how the white folks stole their land. And so we had, you know, we had a pretty mixed crowd. And when we came back from lunch, boy, all the blacks was on one side, except for, you know, two Negroes that wanted to be up with the white folks. But the room split. It split because the white folks couldn't understand. They didn't want to hear about it. But well, Alan Daughter was like, you know, y'all don't listen. This is the problem. Y'all don't want to hear the history that happened while we're in the condition we're in. But it was a real positive part of the training that we did not expect, dealing with the racism and food inequality. So it was pretty heavy.
So just, you know, based off, you know, coming back into agriculture, what are some of the challenges that you've had in dealing with agriculture? I know Sister Kavar touched on a few things, but just coming from your standpoint, what are some of the challenges that you faced in agriculture so far?
Well, I mean, the educational part, the challenge of, you know, well, first of all, you know, how I really got back into it because I had gotten sick. I had gotten bit by a Lyme tick. I had Lyme disease back in 2000. And I got sick, I mean really, really ill. And the doctors wasn't helping me. So I started like trying to get healthy, trying to get, you know, more healthy holistically, and I got led on a lot of different products, niche products. The awareness started leading me down, you know, these different roads, to the point where it came to the realization that it was just certain foods that I had to get off of, you know, like white sugar, white flour, because it was affecting my health.
Right.
So I started coming back into agriculture. It was really because I was really trying to get my health, you know, back, and really trying to avoid foods. When I found out about the genetically modified foods that were in everything, and they're contributing to a lot of health problems that we have, and we don't even realize. You know, I even went through a little thing where I thought I had food allergies, you know. But when I, after I went to Will Allen's place, and that was just an introductory learning. Once I started researching more and more about the GMOs and the side effects, and then the type of foods that you got to avoid, it really was because my health. I was having some serious issues with my health. And so I had to do it. You know, the challenges with agriculture and trying to get people to grow is a lot of our people, a lot of them in the mosque, don't feel like they need it. You know, it's like, oh, I'm good right now. I don't really need, you know, I can't afford organic, but I can afford, you know, designer shoes and clothes, but I don't really need
right.
all that organic stuff right now. I'm good. You know, I pray and I fast, so I'm good. And so that's part of the struggle. We just have a lot of people that just feel like, you know, that they just they're above eating any better, you know, because they eat one meal a day and they fast. They think that's sufficient.
Right.
You know, and then these fast food junkies, you know, their fast food is a serious drug. So, you know, you're talking about people that are hooked on heroin and cocaine and alcohol, man, we got a lot of folks hooked on that fast food. So you talk to them about eating healthy and cooking vegetables, man, that's a serious fight right there, because that takes time. That's why the MGT has so much value when they decided they really want to focus on, as Mr. Farrakhan say, the laboratory, which is the kitchen, and really trying to prepare food in the best manner, because they're the ones that really got to educate our people. How do you take these dishes and really make them into something palatable and tasteful and enjoyable? Because, man, in the food industry, they're no joke. They make plastic look so good. They make, you know, edible plastic taste good. You know, they make food that's not even real taste good, and they make it desirable. And we got to take real food and make it, you know, and convince people that, you know, broccoli and cabbage is good for them. So I give a lot of credit to my wife. She takes stuff out of the garden, and she puts it in a way that makes people want to try it and want to eat it. Because just showing them, you know, a small percentage will gravitate. You know, if you say, hey, this is organic broccoli, or this is Beyond Organic Broccoli, this is, you know, a holistic lettuce and string beans, a small percentage will gravitate toward that, but the majority, it got to be processed. It got to be put in some type of happy meal type of approach for most of the our people.
Yeah, that that's real, you know, I've even heard people say that How to Eat to Live doesn't work, you know, and then if they can only just understand how deep How to Eat to Live goes, it's not just what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in the book. It's actually meant for you to take it further. And when you take it further, you're going to end up right back in agriculture and cultivating your own land and providing your family with its own food. You know, so if people could just understand how deep How to Eat to Live is, then we would have a better inclination towards not only How to Eat to Live, but, you know, just being able to be free, because the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan said, "You're not free unless a man isn't free unless he has his own land." You know, so I love it. I love to see the both of you and what you're doing in agriculture, especially as man and wife. That's very important to me. It's something me and my wife do and are in love with. And one of the things I want to ask you both before the show concludes is what does science mean to you? If you both were walking down the street and someone came up to you and asked, what is science and what does it mean to you and how does it affect your life? What would you tell them?
I would tell them that science is everything in existence, you know, that which we see and more that we do not see. Science is nature, you know, science is productivity, producing. Science is me, you know, science is life. I don't see it as a separate thing. I was never really a great a great science student, I would say, because I get concepts, so I get scientific concepts. Like I can see, but when you try to make me break it down, it's like I can't break it down. But I see that everything that we do, you know what I mean?
Right.
Everything that we do is science. You know,
right.
And so, like I said, my husband is the farmer. He can give you the scientific formulas, and then you know, my job is just to make it known, like, hey, you know, that carbon and that nitrogen that you just put together to make that soil. I'm like, President Trump. And I just come by and say, oh, it's great. It's going to be beautiful. It's just great. It's awesome. It's going to be great.
Oh, man.
Thank you. Man. If I could answer.
Yes, sir.
I look at it, you know, just starting from the foundation of where we are in the Nation of Islam, scientifically. You know, most of us were raised to believe in a spook god, and we've been taught scientifically how to defend that God is not a spirit or a formula. And so, you know, one of the frustrating things or one of the challenges is that getting us to move from, you know, we defend God with science, but then we approach business like it's a mystery god, or we approach eating and, you know, making children or whatever, like we used to approach a spook god, like we just hope it's going to happen. So in farming, you know, you got spooky farmers that, you know, farm and they hope, you know, they hoping that the rain will blow their way. They're hoping that seed will germinate. But there's another level to farming, you know what I'm saying? Well, you know that God is not a spook. He's real. He hear you. So, you know, whether you're making soil or whether you are trying to cultivate the energy in a seed, you know what I'm saying, to give you more than just a good produce, but you're trying to put into the seed, you know, what I've been thinking about and studying about is that everything can be imprinted with an intention. So you can put an intention into your seeds, your soil, anything that's alive, you can imprint it. And so when people say, well, ask what is science? Science is anything that you can tie to mathematics and that can be proven. If you can't prove it, it's not science. It doesn't exist.
That's
you know what
right.
I'm saying? So science is based on science because you can measure it. You can
right.
go back and you can measure it, you can calculate it. And you can keep going back, and it'll keep producing the results, you know. And that's everything that that we deal with. We just have to, you know, grow beyond this, I guess, obsession with religion, and know that the Nation of Islam is a way of life, but it's a way of life built on science, not a mystery, not spookism. Everything is scientific.
Say that last part again, sir.
I said everything is scientific. You know, a lot of times what we do is in religion we focus on religion. And when you focus on religion, you take science out of the equation. Because if you look at our teaching, everything that we were given is based on mathematics and science.
That's right.
You use the mathematics and science to prove that God is not a real, that God is not, or Allah is not a spook, that he's real. Based on what he did mathematically, he weighed the earth, he measured it, you know what I'm saying? And he brought the Al-Bash up the same way. And so if we just apply that same formula in everyday life, you know, when we approach something, it has to be a scientific approach.
Right.
You know, so, and in farming, it's like, man, it's like if you, like the Albert Mitzvah Spark, I told Brother Harry when he was reporting our progress with the sheep, he said, you know, start small, don't start big. Because in agriculture, it's based on science. Sometimes you miss things that you didn't calculate for. And if you lose, you know, like you lose an animal, you can, you don't want to lose, but you might lose an animal here and there for something that you didn't calculate for. But imagine if you had, you know, 100,000 head of cattle or 100,000 head of sheep, and you made a faulty calculation. Now you're losing in the millions. You know, rather than losing in the hundred.
Right. Wow, family. You know, I know everyone who is listening has been thoroughly fed, no pun intended. It's, you know, there's always just something good to say about agriculture. You can never say anything bad about agriculture if you're doing it right. If you're not using GMOs, if you're not using it to hurt people, because if you're using it to damage lives, it's no longer agriculture. It's just, you know, using it as a mass destruction, you know. So I thank you both for joining us tonight. I know I wanted you, maybe, inshallah, you guys can come back again for another episode. You guys didn't get to meet my co-host, Jabril Muhammad. He's 22. He's a materials engineer. But he has a beautiful mind, and I call him my second mind because he usually says what I'm thinking. So if you were both to come back on the show, you'll definitely meet him and get to see what kind of questions he has to offer as well. But I just want to thank you both again for joining us.
Yes,
is there anything else? That, absolutely.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to I neglected to mention the exciting Junior Chef Challenge that's also going to be taking place on Saturday. That is a second-year program for young brothers and sisters, young men and women from the ages of 7 to 17, where they actually take locally grown food from farmers and they have a chef challenge in preparing that meal. And they're going to be judged this year by a pretty much a celebrity hip hop type of chef by the name of Chef Zoo from King's Apron. And he's going to be judging our youth. Last year it was absolutely, absolutely wonderful. So we're gonna do it again. The children, the young people learned a whole lot. And we learned a whole lot just, you know, watching them. One of the young brothers that was a part of that by the name of Brother Isa Muhammad actually came in second place. And they are from Birmingham, Alabama. But unfortunately, this year, he will not be able to physically join us because he did make his transition. But I know his whole family is coming from Birmingham, Alabama, to be with us at the challenge, as well as at the Black Farmers Award ceremony, because he was so much into agriculture that we are now going to do a base Junior Chef scholarship award for him in his name. To keep his spirit in his name alive. And so we look forward to, you know, youth coming out between the age of 7 to 17. We're doing it in the community at Magnolia Park Apartment in Northwest Atlanta. So some of the youth from the mosque will be joining us, but we're also going to work directly with the youth in the community from the apartment community and set them up with learning a bit about composting, beekeeping, and also taking that Junior Chef Challenge and what to do with fresh and local food. So, again, all of this can be found on our page, our Facebook page at Black Agriculture Survival on Facebook, and it'll give you all the information for the tickets for the award ceremony, all of the categories that we're going to be awarding the farmers, the black farmers in, and, you know, we just ask for, you know, support that we can continue to support the community of agriculture and the black farmers.
Awesome, awesome. And once again, can you both mention where they can find out more information about the show before we conclude? About the expo, about the award ceremony?
Yes, they can go to Facebook page, Black Agriculture Survival Expo. That's Black Agriculture Survival Expo on Facebook. It has all of, it's an event page, and it has all of the information, or you can go right there on the page to purchase tickets to the event, to sign up and register a youth for the Junior Chef Challenge as well.
Awesome. Awesome. And Brother Vaughn, did you have anything like that?
Yeah, I got an Instagram right now. You know, the farming is 24/7. But I'm entering my financial service season right now, so we're hiring. We have a phenomenal product for you young people, especially if you got children. And it's an entrepreneur program that's online. But you can hit me up on Instagram at BossBuilder100. That's BossBuilder100. And that's at Black Dollars BossBuilder100, and I can shoot you more information on that online course. We're trying to build young bosses now and give them the financial literacy at a young age. Okay, so you can go on the information page is Boss Juniors at BossJRS.com. Just read up some information. But hit me up on Twitter, Boss. Builder 100. We want to get as many young people enrolled to win. Every quarter, we're giving away $10,000 in venture capital to the best entrepreneur idea. So we want to get all of them smart little young Muslim children enrolled in our program, so they can get that venture capital.
Wow, awesome! I would love to assist with you in that because I do some work similar to that. So I'm going to be touching base with you later on this week to talk about that.
Okay, absolutely.
All right. All right, family. Thank you both so much again for joining us tonight. Absolutely, absolutely. This has just been the Season 2, Episode 10 of the STEM Files, Man, Wife, and Agriculture. To next Sunday on December 10th, our guest is Clenard Henson. He is a master and self-taught chemist who specializes in the chemistry of water and the distribution of water on Earth, which is also known as hydrology. He's very, very, very passionate about clean water and proper water and the type of water and what water is exactly. So definitely tune in for that next Sunday.
Oh, that's my great friend.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Brother Clenard and I go back a little bit now.
Okay.
That's
awesome,
wonderful,
awesome.
Brother. I'll be sure to listen in.
Okay, great, great. So it's the same time next Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. He's also a good friend and mentor to me as well. So it'll definitely be a very interesting show. And for those who are listening, this show is a platform for black people to express their not only their experience and their work in science, but their passion for science. And it's a platform for them to share anything they have going on or anything like that. So once again, this has just been another edition of the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Peace.
Peace.
All right, peace.